When the red card's having you crying uncle, Ted Uncle, that is, it's That's So MLS with me, Nick Thornton, and as always, my good friend Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's been a good weekend. I just had an amazing a combination of a pasta nap and watching the replay of Orlando Portland. Which is perfectly set for that, because you get a lot of goals in the beginning, mm-hmm. and then you have your pasta nap, and then you wake up, and then pretty much everything happens at the end. So
it's true. It's good game to have a pasta nap in the middle.
Yeah, I don't know how I came up with a sleeping through a 5-goal game being my comment on it, but it was actually a very good game.
It was a very good game. But so we're gonna do a rundown of all the games for folks, as we usually do, and we're gonna start with the Friday game, which I somehow missed. I didn't realize there was a Friday game, and then I clued into it, and I was just like, "Oh, New England!" All of a sudden, is second in the East. Keeping in mind, of course, there's lots of games that still need to be played to have the teams even out. But yeah. New England, as we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks, a team showing great promise, came in and fucked up Montreal something fierce.
Yeah, wow. I think that, unfortunately, you can tie a lot of this to the red card that was given to Sapir Tider. He, the most charitable thing that I can say about that play is that it doesn't look intentional. It looks like he's trying to get his foot on the top of the ball. He slips off the top of the ball and really horrifyingly stomps on the leg of the New England player, who lets out a blood curdling howl.
It's been a while since I've heard that kind of scream. Like, you hear it in some USL games because the mics are placed differently, but I think it's pretty hard to argue. I agree. I don't think it is necessarily intentional, but that has to be a red card, and I think is the right decision. I think one of the themes that you'll quickly learn that I've picked out this week is in a league where it's very hard to tell what a red card is anymore, that's a red card. And
yep.
You're right, it's not. I don't think it's an intentional, mean-spirited play or anything, but he gets all player, and it's a horrifying, dangerous tackle. It's endangering the other player. If that's not a red, then you just open the game up to all kinds of dangerous plays, as we saw in numerous games where lots of things were not called. But I was really impressed with the way that New England actually capitalized on this in ways that they haven't done before. And, you know, Montreal looked a little deflated and sort of like they gave up after that red card. But 4 goal scorers, again, Montreal has been a good team. You would not have expected this scoreline last year. What do you think we have to attribute New England's success to?
Well, I think that what we were talking about a little bit previously was that they're working a little bit together better as a unit, I think. Mm-hmm. Whereas previously you might have looked at it and said, like, that the only bright spot was Diego Fagundes. They have a lot going. They have a lot going on for them now. That move, I think that Teal Bunbury was definitely on side.
Yeah.
For his opening one, it's hard even to believe that he hasn't scored yet, because he's had so much of the games that he's been in. But I was impressed by the way that he looked, and overall, it's just the multiple threat and the way that things are working together a little bit easier.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think sometimes you have a team that has players, key players from that they've had in the past missing, that actually opens up the opportunity to form a bit more team chemistry when you're not just trying to play through 2 or 3 players. Mm-hmm. You know, goals by committee is always a good sign. Diego Fagundes continues to impress and be a great player and a great playmaker. The thing that's still baffling to me is Lee Wynn has not stepped foot on the pitch this season, and they're second best in the East.
Well, we have a this is the positive side of something that I saw in that I'm curious about in the Portland game, in terms of, you know, sometimes it's the right move to just make a move to benefit your team over, or like to benefit team chemistry, as opposed to just putting the best lineup that you can on the field all the time.
Absolutely, and credit to Brad Friedel for getting this out of his players. And he's clearly organized them in a way that they haven't been for a long time without any major overhaul. And it's funny because as much as we talked about this as being a potential hindrance to them this season when we were talking about their prospects in the preseason, they've turned it into a success for them, that they're able to get players back into the team and producing and working together in ways that they haven't in a really long time.
Yeah. The one sort of, and I like it is a wonderful performance from them. I leave the game really disappointed by the impact on, especially the clumsiness of their defense, because not only was there that red card, but I felt the penalty the penalty they gave up in the first half that Evan Bush saved, mm-hmm. was also very sloppy. And I just felt for Bush because I felt that he kept the team in the game towards the end of that second half.
Absolutely.
But he just wasn't able to do it alone. He couldn't sustain it through to the second.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. But I think Montreal has a lot of soul searching to do and maybe some DP signing to do, but they look in pretty rough shape these days. And it, you know, this wasn't just a New England playing against 10 men. This is a New England that really turned the screw and mm-hmm. and made it happen. So interesting, but maybe not super surprising.
No. From there, we move on to all the games that happened on the Saturday, mm-hmm. Including your aforementioned Atlanta versus LAFC. I would say that this is one of the more intriguing matchups heading into the weekend for me, because yeah. it's kind of like the old new hotness. The new hotness. Yeah.
Last year's hot girl versus this year's new hot girl.
or debutante of either gender, let's say. And Atlanta really impressed. I don't know if LAFC is just shook, but I think they got particularly lucky. The highlights didn't do a great job of showing some of those, the two penalties. It looked either like a very unlucky situation or a very lucky situation, which I guess is the same thing.
I think the consensus has been with this game, and I watched this game because I was really excited too, and I thought it's going to be like 5-6 or 6-5 or, you know, something like that, and a tight game. The red card that was shown to Chris McCann early on and then was later rescinded as he's literally walking down the tunnel, he's told to come back on.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Here's the thing. I think that at the end of the day, Atlanta capitalized on things and deservedly won the game, and LAFC showed that they do have some defensive things that they need to work on. But mm-hmm. It's not even the way the decisions went, just to be clear. It's the fact that Ted Uncle just seems to rely so heavily on VAR and consistently, to me, is one of the worst referees in MLS.
To be honest, with that red, I bought red.
I did too. I think it's a red. And this is my problem with VAR is I think in the instant, in the moment, somebody's being influenced by the crowd and you have people totally upset. And this is the thing where I go, regardless of what you think, I think it's a red because regardless if you win the ball, when you go two-footed through a player, studs up, it's reckless endangerment to them. He totally cleans out Benny Failhaber, who also didn't see him coming. So it's even more of a dangerous tackle. Okay, so if we're just presuming that's not a red then in this league, then how come the numerous dangerous tackles that happened in the Vancouver RSL game didn't get called as reds? Like, there's just such inconsistency to what is a red, and this really unnuanced argument from most fans, which is, well, he got the ball. It's like, sure, you can win the ball and still foul a person. That's well known in soccer, I thought. It's a dangerous tackle, and I thought he was right the first time.
He was
and
coming
the more
in
I saw
like...
the replays, I was actually like, yeah, I'm just more convinced that this is a red.
He was coming in great guns blazing 40 yards out. Like, there's no need for that.
There really isn't. And that's the other thing, too, is, like, especially the area of the park that it's happening in, it just seems unnecessary. And from there, I just felt like Atlanta continued to be let off the hook time and time and time again. The trouble was is that I think after the second goal, LAFC gave up completely. And then in turn, they got really sloppy. Mm-hmm. But and that's on them to try to turn it around. But there's just at a certain point, you know, I thought at least one of the penalties was a little suspicious. Yeah. And Atlanta spends an awful lot of time trying to win free kicks and win penalties. Considering how much they'd been let off the hook, this was a deeply frustrating game to watch.
It was Sunday when WrestleMania took place. On Saturday, it was Gresslemania. Who got a goal and assist off of a beautiful... That first goal was beautiful. Ball from Parkhurst,
That goal was fantastic. No problem with Julian Gressel here.
And he... I felt that Atlanta had beautiful on the three goals that were goals and not penalty. On the three goals from open play, I thought they showed an aptitude for wide play that was impressive.
Absolutely. And it was nice to see a different player from the usual suspects on Atlanta get his goal. Romario Williams in his debut. And LAFC, of course, at this point, in the 97th minute, really wasn't huffing and puffing too much to pull that back, but it's always nice to see somebody get their start and get the goal, and also see that Atlanta actually does have some depth as well. The big question I think for them coming up will be, it looks like Martinez is out for a bit because he came off practice today with some sort of arm injury, and obviously he's a key player for them.
Hopeful for them that that nothing comes of that. It looks like, they have a Sunday game, so maybe they'll have a little bit more time to decompress first before he's called into action again. What do you think this means, if anything, for LA? Because you're right, it's hard to. When somebody gets a goal disallowed and they say, oh, well, what if we had a goal? It's sometimes hard to buy into that sympathy argument because it's like, well, you could have scored another goal. But a side that should have got a red and didn't get a red and then scored five.
Yeah.
When the red was at zero, when it would have been 0-0 otherwise, it's hard not to feel a little aggrieved.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the questions that will be being asked is, you know, are we going to let this 60 plus thousand crowd strong at Atlanta influence key decisions? Because if we are, then that drastically changes the makeup of the game. And it's a fantastic achievement to have that stadium and to fill it like they do. But I think that from what I've seen in the past, Ted Uncle seems very unsure of his own calls. So my qualm with his refereeing is not, he's an idiot and doesn't know the game. Clearly he's a professional referee and does, but he doesn't trust his decisions. And we've seen a few times in the last couple of weeks where referees are really kind of relying on VAR to bail them out. And rather than watching the game and making their own decision, this whole clear and obvious error thing, I feel like Ted Uncle made the right call, is told to look at it. Again, the official can decide whether or not they look at it. And so now they're hesitating and you've got 60,000 people jeering at you. Mm-hmm. And I think that you start to see different things, but he's right in front of the play. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It's a thankless job, I know, but Ted Uncle seems to be consistently the one that's talked about in MLS, where there's always some sort of something around a red card. For me, it's just about consistency. I'm not expecting every game to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
But when you're coming flying in like that, like you said, 40 yards out, the other player has no sense of it. Whether you win the ball or not is irrelevant, and the rules are pretty clear about that. So I feel like it must be very frustrating as a player to just have to rely on whether or not it's a serious injury. I mean, if he'd broken Phil Haber's ankle, would he have still been sent off? Like, it shouldn't be about what the end result is. It's about the play. It's a dangerous play.
Absolutely. And this sort of a 5-0 result is great regardless, but there are these sort of worries. Do you know, you talk about Uncle is saying, is not trusting his decisions too much. Do you know who shouldn't trust their decisions?
Who's that?
Balomero Toledo.
Oh, yeah.
Who is ever, forever, sticks out in my mind because Atiba was onside in the Gold Cup 2007 semifinal between Canada and the United States that was refereed by Mr. Toledo. But in Orlando Portland, that was a 3-2 finish in Florida, really was shaped by his decisions and not decisions.
Mm.
Because he, let me just find this. I was, something happened early that I was kind of wondering about, and I know that I led into this with the Toledo talk, and the key issue was that he VAR'd something. I had it in my notes. He VAR'd something and then didn't VAR something, and that was the big. That was the big problem. That was the big problem for me is that, like, he makes a call. Everybody thinks it's nonsense. He goes back, double checks it, realizes that, of course, it's the case. But then later in the game, he calls for a penalty and doesn't VAR it. And it really obviously looks like Dom Dwyer in a similar case to the Kendall Waston red card that got rescinded. Ran into his man.
Yeah. Yeah, he did as good of a goal as it was. Now that I've seen it a few times, he does seem to flop quite quickly.
Yeah, his second goal was great. There's nothing wrong with the second goal. Although I was like based on, I was kind of the contrarian on Dom Dwyer last week. So I was trying to like Zapruder it to see if he was offside way up the pitch.
Mm.
But I felt that the Toledo was an unfortunate presence, and in VAR made, it's kind of like if in the other games VAR was a detriment, we could have used more VAR, but
that's exactly my point, is that it's up to the official on the pitch to decide whether or not they VAR it. So my thing is, like, if you saw it and you made the call and you believe that that's what happened, you don't have to go to VAR. And so it's, and I get it, it's a transition time, but how do you decide then when you go to VAR and when you don't?
Okay, so I remember what this first call was. And it ended up being the whole theme of this game is professional fouls. Or like, I had talked last week about whether or not it's okay to take a professional foul.
Yeah.
And early on, there is a scenario where Diego Chara goes down soft in the box, and the announcers, or no, it's not that he goes down soft, it's that he's pulled and he takes a bump. Like, mm-hmm. he is pulled from behind and he goes down hard and waves his arms around, and the commentators make fun of him. And I think, well, it's true, but at the same time, if you... there's an end result issue where if you pretend like it doesn't affect you, you don't get calls. And so if it is a foul, what should you do? In the 17th minute, Toledo calls, Blanco goes down in the box, and Toledo calls, gives him a second yellow and sends him off for a dive, and then VARs it, and then realize, oh no, that's totally a penalty.
Yeah.
And how you can make that call, how you can send a player off and then realize, oops, my bad, and then not double check the one that happens later in the game, I don't understand.
No, and again, that comes back to the consistency piece, is over-relying on VAR to kind of do your work for you. Or under-relying on it for this case. But I think it just seems to be, for some referees, it's like they can't... They can't seem to figure it out, that like there's a time and a place for VAR. Everything's being reviewed anyway, and fed to them via the earpiece. So, yeah, I mean, you want VAR to overturn bad decisions, and that's a case where VAR worked. But it is concerning when you see so many plays that get overturned.
Mm. Well, maybe part of it is just the consistency and efficiency problem. Like you've got a player, you've got a referee like Ted Uncle, who doesn't trust his own decisions, is being, if you suggest it, manipulated by the atmosphere that he's located in, and then you have somebody like Toledo who just. It's baffling to me, some of the decisions that he has made. Merritt Paulson complained about it, said that they had 12 men on the pitch. Then Dom Dwyer's girlfriend, Sydney LaRue, the U.S. women's national team player, quote tweeted him, "Merritt, you're so soft." and that tweet, or one of the tweets that he had made, was deleted. But it was a tough game for Portland because it's been a rough start to the season. I didn't realize that they start on the road so much.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either until this game.
This was their fifth consecutive road game. And third game without starting Liam Ridgewell, which was my point about trying to make a decision in order to... for club balance as opposed to just having your best players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. I think it's a rough... When you're 0-5 and you've got the club captain pinned firmly to the bench and you're a new manager, that's a rough situation to be in.
Yeah, Portland's in trouble right now. You know, and it's not crisis times, but I originally thought with this game of like, okay, right, here's the Portland we kind of remember. But despite all of the refereeing, do think it's important to note that Orlando put on a great performance, and I still think deservedly won the match, because Portland just can't seem to quite figure out what it is they need to do. And although we saw sort of the potent Portland attack again, we saw how things can just utterly break down for them and become a total mess at the back so quickly.
Yeah. I knew going into it. So those first two goals were great. There was Blanco, Valeri, and Chara were all working great together. It was a little bit less disjointed than I think we've seen in some of the previous Portland losses. I chose to watch this game because I was going to look up the highlights, and I saw that they said that somebody has a three-goal comeback. And I didn't know the result, but obviously once Portland goes up two by two, it's like watching a slow moving train. You know, they don't realize that they're the character that doesn't realize that they get killed at the end of this episode.
Totally. The one thing I will say for Portland this game is I thought Jake Gleason, who's not had a good start to the season, largely because his defense is completely incompetent in front of him. He had an absolutely incredible close-range quick save that he made that I thought, you know, it's so unfortunate when you get the arguably save of the week, but your team is still defeated. But I thought Jake Gleason looked a lot better than he has recently. And you know, it's always heartbreaking as a goalkeeper when you make that kind of save and then your team still loses.
Yeah, it's rough for him, and they're close. We've talked about Seattle. They're closer than Seattle.
Oh, much closer. Yeah.
But it's still they've got it doesn't seem like they have it together yet. And I don't know how exactly they're going to resolve that.
Yeah, they've got some work to do for sure. Couple of games that didn't really excite or tell us too much other than they scored some goals. We've got Philadelphia and San Jose. San Jose went up early. Philadelphia got a really nice goal back.
Yeah.
They split the points. I don't have too much more to add about this.
I have some bullet points. What was the thing you were going to say?
I was just going to say that Philadelphia, considering how good San Jose has looked early in the season, I thought Philadelphia looked especially good, and it's good to see them not just defending really well, but actually have a lot going forward. And I thought that their goal to equalize was fantastic, and a good example of a team that has a lot of chemistry. Maybe they just need one or two more pieces to really become a major threat and a contender. But I thought that this was a good point for both teams and sort of an expected game, despite the fact it wasn't electric. Both teams have improved significantly over last year, and the game was not 1-1 because both teams sucked, which was nice.
Are we doing goal of the week later? Or can I name my goal of the week now?
You can name your goal of the week now.
It's Magnus Eriksson at the beginning of this game, the first San Jose goal of the 1-1 draw. We've talked a little bit about Chris Wondolowski becoming a provider as much as a goal scorer, and he splits out wide really well and sends a ball to the top of the box for Eriksson, who has just a really, really pretty strike. And I think it's the nicest one I saw all week.
I agree. It was a beautiful strike. I think I would nominate it for maybe most clinical. I don't know if I know it's not my goal of the week pick, but I agree. Mm. It was a great play. And I at first didn't even recognize that it was Wando who made the run to cross it in. And that's what makes him such a good player, is he really can play wherever he needs to provide for the team.
Mm-hmm. The other notes that I had on that was David Akim is so still good, but he's so alone.
Akam,
yes. David Akam is still great. He was great in Chicago. He's obviously still great, but he's working on his own, it looks like.
Yeah, I think if they can get him and CJ Sapong to link up a little bit more, they have a good thing going. I sort of had forgotten they'd signed him because he's been a little bit quiet, but
yeah,
I think Philadelphia made a lot of really smart moves for the right kinds of players, and you know, this is a good example of a game that you know, San Jose's been pretty hot. They came in and were able to, they went down and came back, got a point. So I think Philadelphia right now has got to feel pretty positive about the way their season's looking.
When Bedoya scored his goal, Alejandro Bedoya scored his goal, he looked so happy to do that for the home fans. I think it might have, I wonder if it was a little disappointing. I wish they could have, I feel like it must have been disappointing to not be able to provide the win, but it was clearly an emotional moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his goal was great. Dallas, Colorado, another 1-1 game. Dallas has proved to be a little bit more difficult to beat this season and have done a few things okay. This game, I've heard another one that I don't have a lot of notes. I think people were kind of expecting to, after Badgie's hat trick last week, really wanting to see him light the place up again. But we sort of saw, to me, kind of familiar performances from both of these teams that were sort of something that's easily shrugged off as like, it's all right.
I think it would have been nice to see Colorado get the win, but I think a 1-1 result is what they could have hoped for.
Yeah. Agreed. No goal of the week here, friends. Chicago-Columbus.
This was an interesting case. I think that if you're trying to figure out what makes Nikolic so good, Nemanja Nikolic, I feel like his first the goal he scored and the only one that he had, he really keeps on it. I think this is a rebound or something where he stayed stuck in and was able to score if I remember right, and I was impressed by that goal.
Yeah, I'm just trying to refresh my memory. I'm just bringing it up now.
He was pressing up high.
I think it's a poor clearance from Zach Steffen. Yeah, and then he picks it up and just, you know, it's so unfortunate because I feel like if Steffen doesn't make that mistake, possibly this is a 0-0 result. But Nikolic just seems like he gets dropped out of a helicopter into the right place every single game. And it's just such a tidy finish. It's a beautiful little goal, but you could tell he really didn't have to work too hard to score it. But there's a reason why he scores so many goals, and it's definitely a poacher's goal. And otherwise, there wasn't, to me, too much that could be taken out of this match. I thought Columbus played okay. Chicago still kind of continues to struggle, but they really did kind of bunker down and put on a better defensive performance than what we've seen. So, yeah.
Judging from the highlights, it looked like they were able to. It looks like the attack is still, the rhythm is still going. They got a lot of chances. Things are still sort of looking on the up and up there, but they just weren't able to put anything together.
Yeah. I'm trying to decide what I want to talk about next. I'm not going to frustrate myself, and I'm going to go to the LA Galaxy Sporting at KC match.
Doesn't it feel like the good guys won in that game?
It does feel like the good guys won.
Close personal friend, Tim Melia.
Yeah, of course. My first note of this just says Latin gets a taste of MLS.
LA can't be a team that sits around and waits for Zlatan to come in the 60th minute. That's just not going to work for them.
No. And I was so glad that this was the result, because I think everybody, not even LA Galaxy fans, I think the rest of MLS commentators needed to eat some humble pie and realize Ibrahimovic is going to come in and score a buttload of goals this season. He is also going to be denied. And I thought SKC got a little lucky in this game because LA just kept hitting the woodwork. For as good as Tim Melia was, I think the goalposts made more saves than he did. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't think that's true. I think he made like 8 saves or something. So it wasn't for out trying. My goal of the week goes to Johnny Russell, though, splitting the defense, dribbling through and finishing. That, to me, I was just like, oh, that is just a classic, good, old-timey goal. Beat 2 defenders. You know, he takes a sort of bobble of the ball off his knee and knocks it down and slides it past the keeper. Stuff of legend.
If you're out there and you've got a gif of Johnny Russell splitting those 2 defenders, please send it to me at Team Bates, because I kind of want to just watch it for like 10 minutes.
Just on a loop.
It's mesmerizing.
It's not even the goal. It's the beating the 2 defenders, and especially how tight they are on him, that he goes by both, but he kind of flicks the ball up, hits it off his knee so that he can step over Ashley Cole's foot and slide it past the keeper. And I immediately, of course, I'm just like, who the fuck is Johnny Russell? And why can he score goals like this?
Have we not asked this question already before?
I think we have. I'd forgotten.
Okay, so is it this? This wasn't this game, but I had another. Kamara on that first goal got Ola Kamara got burned trying to clear the ball out.
Sure did.
But it was only because he was obviously working so hard that he was acting as a central defender. So.
Yeah, I feel it is a bit rough on him to that he cleared the ball so poorly. But the other side of it is he had to be there to clear it because none of his defenders were. And it's not, you know, Kamara has a great work ethic, but we don't necessarily think of him as a guy that comes back and defends a lot as a striker. And yeah. If he's able to add that to his game, then great. But you gotta put your foot through it a little bit more there. But it's unfortunate. You know, as much as it's easy to say it's a poor clearance, it's like, look, we've all been there. Like, sometimes you just don't catch the ball right.
The other thing I had in my notes, further to your, you know, Zlatan learning the truth thing.
Yeah.
Is that when he tries in his cameo appearance to hit another 50 yarder, fuck right off.
Yeah. Yeah. Which again was great. And it was, I think, good for people to see of like, here's the problem with Zlatan though, is he's going to try to do that every single game and he's going to blow chances. Like he's the guy you don't want to be playing with on your rec league team. Cause he's going to always try to take those shots.
And he did it twice.
Yeah.
He did it once way back, and then the second time was a little more reasonable at, like, you know, 35 yards. But it was like he tried to get that chip shot. It's like the first time, like, to try and redo your fancy goal, well, whatever. But then to also do it again was like, what are you even doing?
Part of it is also, I think it's just easy to forget that the best strikers in the world do so because they take a lot of shots. Now, ultimately, you want a lot of those to go in. But as we saw with earlier in the season with Cristiano Ronaldo, is sometimes you just huff and puff and kick the ball every which way but into the net. And if you can score a lot of goals and beautiful goals, then people will talk about that and they sort of forget about how many misses there are. But there isn't a striker in the world that doesn't also have a lot of misses in between all the goals they score.
No.
Possibly Messi.
That was the... So those were the league games.
No!
No? Did I miss one?
You did. You probably wrote it out of your memory like I did. Real Salt Lake and Vancouver.
Oh, yeah! How could I forget?
Because fuck this game.
Oh. I had it as I posted on Twitter. I watched about the first 70 minutes of this on a laptop propped up while I watched two other wrestling events. So I was intaking it.
It's like fine.
The light was leaving the laptop and entering my eyes, but I was mostly just sort of keeping trying to keep a track on it.
I sounded so irate. I was like, no.
Yeah, no. How can I miss? How can I miss the Whitecaps game?
Because it was an entirely forgettable performance from the Whitecaps. I tweeted during this game, this is peak Whitecaps. Performing ever so well and somehow still down a goal and then down two goals off of two mistakes and a fairly good performance from the Whitecaps, but just no finishing ability. The only thing that really grinded my gears about this game is that there was a harsh tackle from behind studs up on Kai Kamara that should have been a red. And this referee, it was another one that just couldn't figure out what he wanted to call and what he didn't want to call. But ultimately it's the Whitecaps' fault for not making this game happen for them. To me, the only real bright spot was the fact that so close to the end in stoppage time, the only clinical finisher who steps up is good old Breck Shea. So I had to just sort of put my hand up and be like, okay, but can we not acknowledge it's maybe not the best idea to always start Alphonso Davies over Breck Shea?
It's hard because Breck Shea, I'm really comfortable with Breck Shea in this role as a utility man who earns his place but is obviously not the preferred person. Like he's living up to that right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with it. And I feel like there's a certain lassitude that comes with it where everybody involved expectations are low. if he doesn't score, nobody's mad at him. If he scores, everybody's happy. I don't know if you start taking away starts from Davies at a crucial time in his development and Shea does not deliver. I don't know if that will be the happiest.
Yeah.
If people will be the happiest about that.
No, it's a good point, and I'm not trying to be overly harsh on Davies. But, you know, the fitness of a bunch of the players look questionable. I know it's at altitude. But, you know, Davies really never looked in this game. And De Jong, for me, was another player that just... People were very irate that then Davies got relegated to the left back. But De Jong was just huffing and puffing and struggling so hard. And to me, this is one of those games we saw. The Whitecaps' defense works well when Vancouver is providing a lot going forward. But they looked really especially vulnerable during this game against a game where they controlled possession, had all of the better chances, and really should have won this game. At the very least, tied it. It was quite a disappointing defensive performance from Vancouver for me, from the whole back line.
I felt that the rhythm and the chemistry is not there. Because on the first goal, you have this weird turning thing where I think it's supposed to be on Efrain Juarez to stop the goal, the shot as it's being made. But he gets in and Nowinski also turns and for some reason at one point has his back to the shot.
Yeah.
And they're both... Like both of them are trying to slide in on the ball, and it kind of goes over the top of both of them.
Well,
and
no, it actually comes off of Nowinski, that goal.
Oh, it comes off of Nowinski. And then it's like, you see, it's not his fault, but you see, like, Kendall Waston standing 10 feet away. Obviously, he's not going to dive in and be a third person in this circus pile. But, like, just looking at this, like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And then if you look at the replay of the second goal, Aha is five yards behind the play, pointing to where he should be.
Yeah.
Which is the player that's running into position being marked by Alfonso Davies.
Credit to him for seeing it and calling it out. yeah, just it kind of all went wrong there. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think it means too much. For me, it was frustrating to see Felipe and Juarez together in midfield because I don't think it's a particularly good combination. I think they bring a lot of the same things, but Philippe has a little bit more finish. This game, to me, I'm like, it's at altitude. You need a speedy, ball-chasing midfielder. Of all the games in the world to play Tybert, this is the game to play him in, to just break up play a little bit more and add some defensive prowess. You know, I know Juarez has played as a defender in various teams that he's played for, but, you know... It may be an unpopular opinion, and I know people have said they thought he was quite good, and even in this game, but so far I fail to see how he's really connecting or breaking up play. And I think maybe it makes sense to pair Felipe or Juarez with someone like Tybert or Gazal, who knows the team and knows the league a little bit better, than to put them both on together. Obviously, Felipe knows the league as well.
I'm still a little, and I feel like maybe this is a little irrational because I don't have a great amount of evidence to back this up. But I'm a little wary of Felipe in terms of team chemistry because they were very high on the Efi Juarez acquisition. Mm-hmm. And they did so much prep in the preseason, and at the last moment, to compared to some other midseason acquisitions the Whitecaps have made in the last few years, mm-hmm. I feel like they get brought in a little bit more smoothly. Whereas yeah. I feel like after doing all this preparation and building your shape, and then buying a midfielder and popping him in the middle of it and saying, "You work with him now."
Yeah, I don't think it sets up him for success. And again, even whether it's Tybert or it's Gasol, I think you need a player that understands the team and understands the formation a little bit more. And I know Robinson is a player's coach, and he likes to give his players license to just do what they do. But we saw this with how it worked and then didn't work for Pedro Morales, is that at a certain point, though, you need a player to play a role within the team. And you're right, Felipe is still new and trying to figure out what that role is. But to put him central with Efi Juarez, to me, I was just like, neither of these are great defensive midfielders. They're playmakers. And so why are they playing as two defensive midfielders together? Where, you know, in the past, there's been some combination of a Alaba tackler and somebody a little bit more ball chasey and running things down. This is kind of a reinvented midfield for them, and they're still trying to figure it out. I would just like them to look a little bit more defensive. I think this hurt them. They did have possession, and I'll say that for Juarez and Felipe, is they were able to win balls, and they were able to have reasonably good passes, and it was actually the forward players that couldn't really finish. I thought it was very disappointing to see Mosquito finally get his start and basically waste it, I felt. But, you know, overall, I think a lot of the players played just okay. But I don't think Mosquito made a very strong point for having him start too many games.
No. RSL went on to have their... They've already had their next their game of the next round.
Sure did.
Today against New York. They lost 4-0.
Did it go well?
No, it went bad. It went real bad. Not bad. Good, bad. This is another one that was affected by a penalty where they weren't sure about it. They did VAR it, and the VAR was correct. It was a scenario where the defender was sitting in the D at the top of the penalty area, and at the last minute clips Morales in the back of the leg. People wonder, well, was it enough clipping? But it looked like it was forceful enough. So I guess RSL gets their win and then loses it back the next week.
Or within 4 days.
Within 4 days.
Yeah, I don't think that's too surprising of a match, you know. New York City FC just continues to make teams pay. I imagine at some point things even out a little bit, but I do think I feel like they've kind of gone through their period of only having DPs and relying on them to really knowing that they've got some good young talent and relying on that some more and doing a bit more squad rotation. But they are going to be a very difficult team to beat this season.
Mm-hmm. We had the CONCACAF Champions League.
Did the thing.
They did. Toronto FC went to Estadio Azteca, of all places. Altidore and Bradley returning to Azteca, but it was not an American who got a goal. In fact, it was Jonathan Osorio who was able to score early on. Kind of established as much as you know TSC would have won on aggregate, anyways. Was able to provide an early way to kind of shut up or to establish their presence in an intimidating soccer venue.
Yes. Which is great to see. So where does that leave us now in terms of, because I've just not really been paying attention to CCL. So where do we stand? What happens next?
Okay, so TFC have defeated Club America. They will move on to the final, which is a two-leg affair against Chivas. After, and I have more to say about TFC, but briefly about the second leg at home, I felt that New York could have done more because they were coming in. They'd gone away to Mexico and only lost 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of chances. From the 1 minute highlight I was able to see, They had a lot of chances. You got to feel a little disappointed for how far they came, that they weren't able to come up with any goals at home and ended 0-0. So Chivas advances to the final, but I guess for TFC it would be almost a little disappointing if they made it to the CONCACAF Champions League final and faced another MLS team. They will play the first leg on the 17th, which I think is a Tuesday. They will play next week midweek, and they have a game on the 14th against Colorado. So expect them to completely. That will be a non-factor, that Colorado game. That doesn't mean that Colorado is going to win, but I would imagine the organizational commitment TFC will have to that Colorado game is zero.
Yeah.
And probably for the right reasons. It's an away game. It's an away to Colorado. You go away to Colorado, and then the home leg is in Toronto. So the CCL game is in Toronto for the final. If they beat Chivas over 2 goals, they advance to the Club World Cup.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think at this point it would just be historic to get the CCL win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that as much as Toronto has struggled in the preseason, I think now we're beginning to see why perhaps they have, and that they really are. At the end of the day, do they really need to win MLS Cup again? Like, I somehow feel like they just don't care as much about defending the championship as let's win something new. And to defeat, we always knew it was going to be at least one Mexican club in the final. So to sort of put a stamp on it and prove that MLS clubs can compete, I think is a major point of pride for them and something that they're rightly concentrating on.
Yes. I would say... I would say it's not even so tough because if you think about it, there's still a lot of time. They've got a win.
Yeah.
So they're further ahead than Portland. And I wouldn't say that with the playoff system in MLS that there is any way to say that you absolutely can't. The somewhat lack of focus. Or at the very least, playing a B team in the league, which is what I think they've done. There's kind of like three or four key players that show up at MLS games that were not a part of sort of the classic MLS Cup lineup.
Yeah, forget winning even MLS Cup again and defending the championship. I don't think they care about winning the Supporters Shield. I think Greg Vanney is clever enough and crafty enough and prideful enough to say, fuck it, let's go for third. Like, you make it into the playoffs, you've got, as long as you're one of those 6 spots, and then go in and steamroll people. You've got the whole season to figure it out. Also, if you're able to have something like a CCL final in your cap this early into the season, imagine the kind of momentum that's going to create behind the team to have them begin to refocus and power through the league. And as we've seen again, they have depth. This isn't a team that's just founded around Giovinco and Altidor. They certainly help, but, you know, if Osorio is going to be your guy, then great.
I thought this was kind of funny that probably they wouldn't have to play in the first game, but just because I was looking up what the timing is, and I know this is very presumptive on both fronts, both competitions, but if they were to qualify for the Club World Cup, it would take place from December 12th to 22nd of this year. In the United Arab Emirates. So if they somehow qualified both for that competition and made it to MLS Cup, MLS Cup would take place 4 days before on December 8th. So...
But the Club World Cup thing is like, that is a bit of a dog. That's a dog and pony show. No, like... It's nice to win, but it's not a serious competition, really.
I guess it's kind of. I guess
it's fun.
Like in the league. It would be a fun. It would be a fun. In the league, it would be a huge pain to, and it will be a huge pain this weekend to have to do something in the league and then get on a plane and fly somebody somewhere else. But I feel like if you were in the championship game, maybe it's a little different whether or not you win or lose the game. And then you have to get on a plane and you have sort of like a season coda.
Yeah.
That's not the worst.
It's not the worst. And, you know, either you're going, flying somewhere licking your wounds, or going and celebrating another victory, playing against some European club that's never heard of you before. So that's... nothing's on the line, right? No one's going to be like, oh man, what? Borussia Dortmund beat TFC? Fuck.
Well, I mean, they didn't make it to the semifinals. I thought there was a chance that I saw on Twitter that Juventus had a fight back against Real Madrid in the Champions League. And Juventus versus TFC in a competitive match would be an interesting...
Certainly would be. Yeah, no, I just saw, too, the red card against Buffon. And Buffon. Fuck, man.
In any
doesn't
case,
just happen in MLS.
In any case, I know this is all very presumptive, but it was seriously, people are calling the 1-1 draw in Azteca the best TFC result in history, and I don't think they're wrong. One of their best performances, and I didn't get the chance to see it live, but it certainly looked okay. It certainly looked pretty good. The pass for Rosario's first goal was funny, that it was kind of just barely nudged on by Ricketts, and I almost wonder if it was the defender who put it off. In my offside goal, pursuant to my offside goal forever discussion, Toronto scored an own goal. It was ruled offside, which I'm not 100% sure that's how it works.
I'm not sure either. This is where, you know, there's probably soccer nerds out there who could better clarify what exactly the rules are. But that seems a little like...
The guy who plays the ball in off of Zavaleta is definitely offside.
Right.
He's offside. He has possession of the ball. He's working. So I guess at that point, the play should be called dead. But right. He definitely... It's not a Palomero to Toledo, Canada-US situation where a player is... Where a defender passes to the attacker, and now I think the attacker is definitely onside at that point.
Yeah.
It is the attacker plays... The attacker who is offside in is... You know, the play should be dead at that point. Knocks it in off Sabaleta, which was totally lucky for them. I kind of wonder... I felt the penalty was soft that America got later on. There's little that can be helped about that. And ultimately, it didn't contribute to the end result. Bono was also great. He had some good saves. Those were my notes from that game.
Nice. Yeah, I guess we'll stay tuned for the final and try to break it down for people.
In our very first episode, we were super early calling for TFC Seattle, and it ended up happening. So I don't feel so bad about so openly speculating about what could happen in December. But it's all, of course, a big pipe dream at this point.
Truly. So jumping back a little bit, I got two more things. I don't know if you've more. Your MLS team of the week, who do you pick out of the group? Who impressed you the most?
I'm going to go with Kansas City. As much as that was an interesting game and a spirited fight back from Orlando, I can't love them entirely because, Dwyer had an amazing 12 minutes into kind of nothing game besides that.
Yeah.
And one of the three goals, as stated, I think is not legit. So I got to go with Kansas City who went away and had a strong, went away, played their game, shut up the LA offense that everybody was so excited about and were able to score two great goals aside.
Great. I was going to say Orlando, but I feel like you've swayed my opinion slightly.
Oh, yeah, I kind of really, I'm sorry, I really preemptively just shit-talked that opinion.
No, it's great. This is why we talk about sports. I can have my mind changed. That's fine. I agree SKC is my runner-up, but I'm going to say that my team of the week is New England. They were playing a man up for most of the match, but New England actually capitalized on it. And given how much we've talked about them receiving red cards and screwing things up for themselves, they finally got something to go in their favor that, as we've talked about, was clearly a fair red card despite it being early in the match, but they actually took advantage of it and actually played well. And I've never watched New England or not in recent memory and gotten excited by their style of play, and I think as a team it was a great team performance, so they're my pick.
Who is your player of the week?
My player of the week? Oh, it would be easy to say, you know, Almiron, or, you know, a few others, but I'm going to go with Johnny Russell. That play, it just, I know it's one play out of an entire game, but come on, I think it's worth it. Who's your player of the week?
My player of the week, I don't know if this is a joke answer or my real answer yet. it is Kendall Lawson, who, when asked about the upcoming game against LAFC, whether or not he would feel bad about facing Jordan Harvey, he had said, quote, "No, even if I was playing against my mom, I would still tackle her."
Yep. Classic. So that's Kendall.
That's maybe my joke answer. I would say my real answer is Melia.
Melia? Yeah, it's hard to argue. Yeah, I think he did have 8 saves in that game. I think the woodwork had 4, but he had 8. He still has somehow beat that. the last little thing I have here is just a little bit of news, if you can call it that. It's really more speculation, and that is that DC United apparently is in talks with Mario Balotelli's agent. This is not a new rumor that Balotelli may come to MLS. For me, it's more of the team in question. But we know that DC's eyes have become quite big as of late, and they've got their new stadium, and clearly they've got some money. What do you think? Is it time for Balotelli to come to MLS?
What I've heard on this front, people I feel like are saying, you know, just the chatter I've heard is no, that it's kind of a strange move at this point. I mean, it's not like in Fernando Torres's name came up this week as well as a player who's out of contract and may be interested in wandering around. I don't think that these players are, and certainly not Balotelli, I want to be a little wary about taking any European wannabe that is interested in casting their anchor in this direction. But I think that the context that I hear people talking about this Balotelli thing is DC has had a really rough start of the season, having to be away so much. And I think that in the same way as you saw... And the same way as you saw a serious league promotional and resource effort put into Atlanta once they moved into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, not that there wasn't before that, but it turned up.
It escalated very quickly.
Everything escalated so fast once they got into that building. Once they get into Audi Field, I definitely see the money falling into place to allow them to get a huge and immediate upgrade.
Yeah, and I think the ownership has signaled as much, is that they do want to invest and reassert DC as a top team in MLS. I also think they know it's not going to happen overnight, but we've seen the kind of investments they're willing to make in players to try to play a more exciting style of game, and it's not quite happened just yet. But the building blocks are there. I still kind of agree. I don't think Balotelli is going to come to MLS, nor should he. The last time he played in North America, he got sent off from for trying to attempt a backheel goal in Vancouver. And he got pulled out of the team because it didn't work.
Yeah. Of course it would be exciting to see a player like him. It kind of reflects an unfortunate thing in his career, which is I feel like by having the extravagant star tag that is so often foisted on black players, and I feel like they are judged a little more harshly for that. I think that the fact that he's in Nice in the first place is like, this is only kind of happening because nobody is paying attention to him. Because people are surprised by, oh, Balotelli. But I feel like he should be in, not to say that MLS is inherently a dishonorable destination by any means. And when you compare it to Ligue 1 teams that aren't PSG, it's a little closer than some of the other top leagues in Europe.
Yep.
But I would think that he would want to be making a move up from Nice.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think he has anybody but himself to blame for why he's there. Like, clearly this is a player with the deep behavioral issues. And I agree that black players do consistently get judged more harshly. I mean, Suarez can bite as many fucking dudes as he wants, and we're still like, I think he should go to Barcelona! Bite people there! Have you ever had tapas? It's great! Move him.
Yes. Okay, I guess he had a training ground bust-up with Mancini.
He did. He shot BB guns or a pellet gun at a bunch of youth players, and...
Okay, that's not alright. I didn't know that part.
He like, sets fireworks off in hotel rooms and stuff, but... Yeah, but players do a lot of messed up things, and I agree that there is a double standard there for players, especially in Europe. The way that European media treats black players is nothing short of abhorrent. But I agree. I think Balotelli is looking for a move up, not a move down. And from what so far, the lack of news out of Nice to me says I think he's mellowed out at least a little bit. And I would honestly say, like, in terms of value for money, I think DC can do a lot better than Balotelli.
It when you compare Balotelli's 27. I still think, depending on what you get him for, that you'd be foolish to turn him down. But he's certainly not the type of acquisition that Atlanta made their bones off of.
No, and that's kind of my point, is like, if you're going to spend the money, spend $3 million on a brilliant Uruguayan or Chilean player that can come in and probably be more of a team player and provider than spending potentially a lot more on a player like Balotelli that will come in and score goals, but is not going to be a person that the team can rally behind and you may not have for very long. That being said, it makes sense in more of a marketing perspective. If DC's got to put bums in their brand new stadium, and considering the crowds that have come out to watch them at whatever local soccer pitch they've been playing on any given
that
week.
That happened once, but it's fair.
It was only once,
but still fair.
Even, you know, their current stadium is like half the seats are empty, so I think they're going to want to be looking to have some star power there. I don't think Balotelli's the right choice. I would actually say Torres is an interesting option because I feel like he's still got something to prove.
That's true. And I feel like, I don't know, with Torres, though, like, Zlatan is not so one-dimensional. I feel like Torres would be, but he would score goals.
It's true.
I asked this last week, and I'll ask it again. Do we care about the standings yet?
Until the games even up a little bit more, I'm not too fussed. My big thing just was what I texted you the other day, which was, New England is second in the East. What happened? What happened?
But Whitecaps second in the West at 10 points behind Kansas City at 13.
Yeah, I think it's... still far too early to tell.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think until these next set of games, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS, riling up the RSL fans on what's a red card and what's not. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.teambates.com. I am an editor at Howler, whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at www.thatsomls.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
It's true. And
on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts.
Do those things, please. Right. Well, until referees can decide what is or isn't a red card, don't get sent off. Or called back on. Or then sent off and then called back on again. And it's a vicious cycle.
I aspire to be sent off twice.
Wait, that's more your WrestleMania theme. Wait, he's back! It's Andrew Bates! He never left! He's come down the...
That's actually good. I don't want to... This is the outro, but two players got sent off and came back. I think it has to be WrestleMania man related.
Oh, I love it.
Wait, that's Sebastian Blanco's music!
Valeri's pissed! He's out with the table!
Oh. By God, they killed him!
It's an absolute bloodbath! That's actually...
As God is my witness, LAFC is broken in half!
The worst part is we kind of sound like some MLS commentators right now. It's in the net! It's in the net! Oh dear, this league... Great.
I love it, though.
All right.
Wonderful. I skipped... I decided not to do the wrestling thing because we were at that sweet spot. It would have been fun. It would have been fun, but you're right. We should be as close to an hour as possible. I feel like that doesn't have to happen all the time, but especially if like, but I feel like in the last couple of weeks it's been more. The Whitecaps games have not always been the most emotionally invested ones.